Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. It's not much of an exaggeration to say that all of America is waiting with bated breath for the Mueller report to be handed in to the Justice Department. And then, in some form, it'll go out to the world, and everybody seems to expect it soon. Now, what that will mean for the presidency and the nation, we're going to try to tease out those questions in just a little bit. But before we do that, you might want to refresh your course on the basic facts of the Russia investigation, the broad strokes of what we've learned so far. Because with all the headlines of the past 2 years, this one brought in for questioning, that one indicted, this one cooperating, it's hard to keep track of all that's really come about. So we gave reporter Adam Davidson this challenge. Give us a summary of what we know so far about the Mueller investigation, and do it in 3 minutes or less. Spoiler alert, he failed.
As I see it, the case can be broken up into four phases, four more or less discrete periods of time from late 2015 right on through 2017.
Phase one, the hustle.
Felix Sater, a longtime associate of Trump's, heard from a friend in Moscow that some land was available and that it could maybe become a Trump Tower. This was in late 2015. Trump was running for president, but was still considered a long-shot joke of a candidate.
I will get along, I think, with Putin, and I will get along with others, and we will have a much more stable world.
It seems fairly clear that most around Trump saw little chance that he'd win, but maybe, just maybe, this presidential campaign could lead to a payday. With Trump's blessing, Sater, along with his longtime friend and Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, pursued the deal. They did a bunch of things that people wouldn't do if they thought their colleague, Donald Trump, might soon become president. They pursued financing from a Russian bank with connections to Vladimir Putin and his cronies. They employed a known spy for Russian military intelligence to help them get the project approved. They even plotted to offer Putin a free penthouse in this hypothetical tower. Now, they were all outsiders in the high-end world of real estate in Russia. Sater and Cohen and Trump were desperately trying to get the attention of big shots in Moscow, and they weren't succeeding. The deal during the hustle phase, like Trump's candidacy, was going nowhere.
Phase two, the scramble.
New Hampshire, I want to thank you. We love you. We're going to be back a lot. We're not going to forget you. You started it. Remember, you started it.
In early 2016, shortly after Trump did far better than anyone expected in Iowa and New Hampshire, Russian government-linked hackers finalized their plan to sway the election in favor of Trump.
Do we love our country? Do we love our country?
Several Americans with ties to the Russian leadership joined the Trump campaign, including Mike Flynn, Paul Manafort, Carter Page. Within weeks, Russian hackers have broken into the email accounts of the Clinton campaign and several other Democratic groups. The evidence we have so far makes it seem like this time in the spring of 2016 is fairly chaotic. There's lots of Russian-linked groups. Some are doing hacking. Some are reaching out to various figures in Trump's orbit, including some people pretty far outside of the inner circle, like George Papadopoulos. The Russian government seems to want to have access to Trump. Trump, at least from the business sense regarding Trump Tower, is trying to get access to the Kremlin. And neither side seems to know quite how to develop this relationship.
Phase three, the meeting.
On June 9th, 2016, Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, and Paul Manafort meet with eight people from the former Soviet Union to discuss ways in which the Russian government might help the Trump campaign. This is the infamous Trump Tower meeting in which dirt was promised on Hillary Clinton. And Don Jr. replied, "If it's what you say, I love it." What happened at this meeting and the way Trump and others in his orbit responded to it is a key focal point of the Mueller investigation. Soon after the meeting, things seem very different and not quite so chaotic and haphazard. There are far fewer reports of Russian officials reaching out to peripheral Trump characters. And Trump himself speaks as if he knows something's coming from the Russians.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
Over the summer of 2016, the Russian government effort to sway the election is becoming very active. During this period, Paul Manafort, who has a history of doing business in Ukraine, is promising favors to people he knows who are linked to the Kremlin. And during this time, the Trump campaign becomes increasingly pro-Putin. They change the RNC's position on Ukraine, and Trump is openly praising and defending Putin against charges of hacking.
I mean, it could be Russia, but it could also be China. It could also be lots of other people. It also could be somebody sitting on their bed that weighs 400 pounds, okay?
We know now that in mid-August, Trump was explicitly told that the Russians are seeking to interfere in the election. He's asked if he has had any contacts with people close to the Kremlin. He says no. 2 days later, he fires Manafort. And there's just all sorts of contacts we now know about between people quite senior in the campaign and either Russian officials or people who seem to be close to the Russians. Donald Jr. begins communicating directly with WikiLeaks. Jeff Sessions holds two meetings with the Russian ambassador. And of course, Roger Stone is communicating continuously through an intermediary with Julian Assange. It appears that Sater and Cohen are taken off the Trump Tower Moscow project. And it's still unclear what exactly was happening with the building after this point, although Rudy Giuliani recently said and then recanted that there were negotiations right up till the election. In public statements and during the debates with Hillary Clinton, Trump continues to insist there is no evidence that Russia is behind the various forms of election interference. He denies any business dealings with Russia.
Putin has no respect for this person.
Well, that's because he'd rather have a puppet as president of the United States.
No puppet.
And it's pretty clear.
You're the puppet.
It's pretty clear you won't admit
that the
Russians have engaged in cyber.
Then, of course, Trump is elected president. And we know not all that much about what happened between election night and inauguration day.
Phase four, the denials.
It is hard to talk about phase four without sounding partisan, because the clear truth is that Trump himself said things he knew to be untrue. We have a word in English for that. It's called lying. Several, including Trump's lawyer, campaign manager, and national security advisor, have admitted they lied to the FBI at the time about their relationship with Russia. And Roger Stone was just indicted, in part because of his denials to Congress concerning communications through an intermediary with Assange during the campaign. In May 2017, Trump fires James Comey, the head of the FBI, when he won't stop investigating Michael Flynn's connections to Russia, and possibly Trump's own connections to Russia.
There was no good time to do it. And in fact, when I decided to just do it, I said to myself, I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story. It's an excuse.
That's when Robert Mueller is appointed in May 2017. There is still much we don't know. We know with legal certainty, though, that there was a lot of contact between the two sides, between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin, and a clear commonality of interests that both sides expressed to each other repeatedly. But what exactly did Trump know? When did he know it? How involved was he? We don't know yet. And his political future rests on the answers to those questions.
Adam Davidson, with what we know about the Mueller investigation so far. Adam writes our column called Swamp Chronicles, and you can find it at newyorker.com.